Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by Mobius Strip Press. I am G.R. Mobley. If you go to my site, reclaimingtherepublic.org, you will have access to my content and support documents and links. This is an educational grassroots program leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. And welcome back. I told you I was going to talk about the House vote on the national emergency, and I will do that. And we're also going to get back into the dialogue on the militia. I can't impress upon you how important obeying and complying to the Constitution. If we would have maintained the militia, I don't think we would be in some of these situations we are today. Now, I truly believe that the outcome of the Civil War would have been different and would have been they would have had to handle it differently. However, with that, this show is also sponsored by Reclaiming the Republic, as reclaimingtherepublic.org, as well as republicreview.org. You're listening to the only show that will give you the constitutional perspective of what our problems are and how to get the federal government into compliance with the Constitution. It's really not hard. And as a matter of fact, if you start looking into what we're doing, this is literally what Jefferson and Madison espoused and actually acted upon in 1798. The number to call in is 215-867-8255. And so let me get into the quick obligatory, if you want to call it, groveling, and or if you're more than, and you're more than welcome to, you know, go to the GoFundMe campaign and contribute. But if you want to get involved, send me an email, info@reclaimingtherepublic.org. And if you do, we will get you engaged and give you information and help you, because we want to help you be successful, because if you're successful, we're successful. It's there is a symbiotic relationship here. So with that, we're more than happy to get your help. But if you want to help in a different perspective, go check out the Constitution Club at constitutionclub.ning.com and go sign up. They actually have the ability to drill into your counties within your states and so forth. So they've got a different level of organization on that website. Now, tomorrow, we're going to be interviewing Erin Williamsley, and we're going to be talking to her. She's from Our First Right, which is an organization that is promoting the ratification of an amendment that was written by James Madison. That's right. There's still one out there that's lingering that hasn't been passed, and she's going to give us some details on that, and I think you're going to find it interesting. And this, just like rescinding the 17th Amendment with the Constitution Club, these are two good efforts in helping try to drain the swamp and getting this grip and this control that the communists have on Congress and literally getting it back into the hands of the people. And she'll get into all of that tomorrow. So you definitely want to tune in and check out the Our First Right organization, as well as Erin Williamsley's description and information. So just check it out tomorrow. We'll be interviewing her tomorrow. I will also tell you that, as I always do, I did go through the news, and there is no sign that the federal government is going to get rid of any of their tyrannical roles, responsibilities, and powers. Are you kidding me? They're looking to self-aggrandize, and we'll get into some of that stuff that they're trying to do today to increase their power and control over us. We are living under despotic rule, and it is tyranny because it is arbitrary and unlawful rule that we are living under. So with that, because there's no sign of the fact that they're doing all of these things and they're trying to do even more to us, that means we're going to have to do it. That means that you and I are going to have to roll up our sleeves and we're going to have to start working together. And I truly believe as long as we put aside our differences, as long as we put aside our self-interest, we will succeed. That was the framers, what the framers did so that they could succeed, because they obviously had to put aside their differences and their self-interest. I also want to thank you for tuning in. I do appreciate it, and I appreciate the fact that you're letting other people know. Please keep getting the word out that there is a solution. This is the place. Come and drink from the well. We have more than enough for all. So this congressional solution, or I should say the House solution, because it's really not congressional until the Senate signs on board with this, is an ideological stunt that places Congress at odds with the Constitution. When I say Congress, I really mean the House. So the House is at odds with the Constitution. In other words, here is a whole bunch of people that just recently raised their arm to the square and they said, I stated their name, affirmed to support the Constitution of the United States. And they're not supporting the Constitution of the United States. What they're doing is they're supporting those who are directly violating the U.S. Constitution. Article 4 of the Constitution states this, that the United States shall guarantee to every state in this union a republican form of government and shall protect each of them against invasion. They have the United States government, Congress, the House, has not only a moral obligation, but a constitutional obligation to protect us from invasions. What do you think this is? Whether it be in caravans of thousands or small companies escorted by coyotes, whether that be in the tens to the hundreds, it is still the same. It is a strategic effort to inject people who are not willing to assimilate and who are literally and deliberately trying to violate our Constitution, and they're here trying to get on board with the unconstitutional handouts. They're here for the entitlements. Yes, socialism in America is unconstitutional. There's all sorts of things that the federal government is doing that's unconstitutional. And pretty soon, my telling you that will be illegal. It was illegal once before. They arrested Upton Sinclair for reading the Constitution in public. They are enemies to the Constitution because they're deliberately trying to violate our immigration laws by not coming through the ports of entry. And so those who are fully supporting them are giving aid and comfort to the enemy. I fully and wholeheartedly support Trump in calling on this national emergency. And as a matter of fact, what he needs to do is he needs to actually bypass the state governments and go out to and have his organization, go out to his administration, reach out to all of the militias that are out in the states and say, you know what, we're going to come in and we're going to start funding you. And because the Constitution actually gives us this power to do this, and we would like you to come down and help. And you will find that there's all sorts of good patriots that would love to go down to the border and if you want to call them camp out or what have you, but it would become their full-time job of being down there. And I'm sure that there would be people that would be... And I'm sure they would be compensated because they're in the service of the country, and that would be something that would actually be a compensated thing. I would love to see Trump actually call up and call for the militia. Now, technically, Congress is supposed to do that, but obviously Congress is failing to do their job, which means Trump has another problem, and he needs to actually use his unconstitutional Justice Department to go after these folks. If he called up the militia and funded them, it would be putting us back into compliance with the Constitution. And how great would that be? He should also charge all of these politicians who are failing to support the Constitution with moral perjury and strip them, because that's what they called Section 3 of the 14th Amendment. It was the punishment for committing moral perjury when you fail to support the Constitution. And so I would love to see him strip every single one of these congressional players, whether they be in the Senate or whether they be in the House, strip them of their ability to be public servants. Now, what? There is a way that they can get their public service back. But let's see if we strip them and kick them out, let's see if their replacements will be so willing to actually let them have their public service back, because that would mean that they would have to give up their job back to them again. And I'm here to tell you that that flies in the face of the political creature that is always looking to serve oneself. So I truly think that we would probably find this moral, what do you want to call it, a moral awakening in Congress as these new people that would come in and go, nope, you don't deserve to serve. But I just love to see this. I would love to see us start actually following the things and the tools that the Constitution gives us. I mean, how great would that be, right? I live for, and I'm hoping you live for, the day that we can see the federal government in full compliance with the Constitution. And that's what Reclaiming the Republic is all about. Nothing less than that. And as you can tell, there it is. It's come up upon us. We're at a hard break. And so when we come back, I will meander over a couple more topics. But we're going to get into the militia and the dialogue between Mason, Madison, and the rest in the Virginia ratification debates, and more specifically June 14th. But we'll be right back after a couple promos. So please stay tuned. We'll be right back. Thank you so much. Reclaiming the Republic is more than an educational radio show. My intent is to also work with you and local leadership to promote matters of the Constitution and self-governance. This way we can all promote constitutional awareness within our communities and with our elected officials and public leaders. If you love liberty and sovereignty and recognize the federal tyranny that is threatening our lives, then we are asking for your help. And here are a few ways you can help. Spread the word about this radio show, Reclaiming the Republic. It is the only radio show in the world asserting a constitutional solution to federal overreach. Download and share our podcast and content. Read, like, follow, and share our Moby Strip Press and Reclaiming the Republic pages on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter at Moby Strip News. Get informed about local groups in the area and get involved. Most importantly, become a constitutional warrior with your local leaders and demand that they begin applying constitutional tests to what they are doing and who they are supporting. Thank you. If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you. Okay, so the number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK or 215-867-8255. Do not forget my three C's when you dial in. And let's get on with the dialogue.
I know I don't say this enough. I know I don't thank you enough. And I know I don't say this either. I know I don't thank President Trump enough for doing what he is doing. He's actually doing things that the president is supposed to be doing. Fighting this insurrection, this this invasion is one of those things. The other thing is fighting those who are hostile towards liberty and those very specifically airing hostility towards the United States and our existence. And North Korea is one of those evil players that has been a rogue state for China for years and years and years. And so I'm really thankful that he's in Vietnam in working with North Korea in trying to hammer out an opportunity for them to walk away from communism. I mean, I hope he brings them out of this communist curse, because if you want to think about it, how many people have died in North Korea because of communism? Not because of the free market, not because of, you know, supply and demand and those types of things. They've died because of the ideological enslavement to the communism, to allowing these despots to dictate who gets what they get to do, and so forth. And so this is what a president is supposed to do. He's supposed to be fighting for liberty and especially fighting for those who are directly calling us out as opponents. On the other side, the House is now now literally trying to push us closer and closer to communism. And they're looking to push single-payer, full government control healthcare upon us. Medicaid for all, Medicare for all, whatever they want to call it. It's a single-payer healthcare system. And if you think government-ran healthcare is good, go look at the vets and see how well the vets are being taken care of. If you want to see the death list and those types of things that come from a government bureaucracy, there you go. And you want to inflict this upon the American people? America had the best medical system in the world until the 50s, when Eisenhower created the Health, Education, and Welfare Department. And that's what got government involved in healthcare. And in doing so, that was the beginning of government's fingers growing and growing into our healthcare system, to the point with Johnson expanding it and with Obama literally seizing it and stealing it away from us. We have to get back to a free healthcare system. We have to get back to the ability that the states have in managing, you know, whether they want to have closed boundaries or what. There are ways of changing states. That's either by voters moving or by voting in good people. There are consequences to vote, you know, to elections. There are consequences to voting in the wrong people. This is the consequence of putting communists in the House of Representatives. And there's no doubt that it is in the hands of communists. Oh, so the communist is their cheerleader. Another thing that I'm really happy to see regarding the Constitution, some of the news that's out there, I'm really happy to see that the federal government has ended SALT, or what they call the state and local tax deductions, which are now being capped. Well, they haven't ended them, but they're capping them at $10,000. This needs to be zero. They need to end any type of deductions that the federal government is allowing for state and local taxes. What this is the federal government subsidizing socialism at the state level by allowing the federal government to help write off those state taxes that you're paying for all these social programs that the state wants to implement. We need to stop that. What we need to do is let socialism slap everybody in the face for the real cost it is, and let people realize that this would be a downward spiral, that we would end up losing everything we have, and then we would be living under the even worse tyranny than today. It would be full enslavement to the state. Just kind of like what China wants to do in their social credits program, where they monitor everything you do. They're already trying to do this. They've already started this with your utilities, with metering your water, metering your electricity, and everything else. So if all of a sudden you're using more water than you should be, let's say you wash. They've already passed a law in California that says that if you wash your clothes as well as take a shower in the same day, that could be, I think, $1,000 or $10,000 fine. and they're going to start punishing people. How tyrannical is that? And if you understand, California just got hit with trillions and trillions of gallons of water from all these rainstorms, and it's all running back into the ocean, and they're still claiming that they have a water shortage. What? Are you kidding? I mean, this is what happens when communists take over. It's about control. It has nothing to do with ending problems with real, tangible solutions. So anyway, and one other thing that I wanted to kind of throw out there before we get into the militia, the reading of this great dialogue, is that Oregon wants to impose a statewide rent control. Now, this has happened in New York City. This has happened in other places, but this is the first time it's gone statewide. And what ends up happening in these little petri dishes of socialism and communism, these ideas grow legs. And what ends up happening is that it goes to a state near you. Next thing you know, Congress says, hey, we got to do this. We have to start controlling rent everywhere. And as soon as they do that, that is the beginning. Because look at how screwed up New York is. Look at how screwed up all of these socialist cities that have tried to put in these draconian type of laws. They're the pathway to blight. And so I'm just letting you know that these things grow legs, and just wanted to point out the fact that Oregon has literally lost their minds in implementing rent control. And they're only going after and supposedly trying to serve those who have less and taking from those who have more. But it never really works out that way. And so one of the things I want to do is I want to kind of take off or get back to where I left off yesterday. And so in this conversation, Madison was responding to George Mason. Now, remember, George Mason wanted to add a bill, or I should say an amendment to the Constitution to limit the militia, because he saw that the government had, you know, because the militia was the only mechanism for internal defense and enforcement of federal laws and so forth, like taxes and that type of thing, when the federal government levied taxes against whiskey, they used the militia. And Washington and Hamilton went out to Pennsylvania, I think it was, and they used force to make sure that they started paying these excise taxes. So Madison goes on and says, as his response to trying to create this limitation, he says, I cannot conceive that this Constitution, by giving the general government the power of arming the militia, takes it away from the state governments. The power is concurrent and not exclusive. We have not found from experience that while the power of arming the governing the militia has been solely vested in the state legislators, they were neglected and rendered unfit for immediate service. Every state neglected too much this most essential object. But the general government can do it more effectually. Have we not also found that the militia of one state were almost always insufficient to secure its harassed neighbor? Did all the states furnish their quotas of the militia from sufficient promptitude? The assistance of one state will be of little avail to repel invasion, but the general head of the whole Union can do it with effect. If it be vested with the power to use the aggregate strength of the Union, if the regulation of the militia were to be committed to the executive authority alone, there might be reason for providing restrictions. But, sir, it is the legislative authority that has this power. In other words, Congress has to call forth the militia. They must make a law for the purpose. The honorable member is under another mistake. He wishes martial law to be exercised. Now, I want you to get this. This is really important. The honorable member is under another mistake. He wishes martial law to be exercised only in the time of war, under an idea that Congress can establish it in time of peace. In other words, he's saying that Congress can't establish martial law in times of peace. It can only do it when the militia is being called. The states are to have the authority of training the militia according to the congressional discipline and of governing them at all times. When not in the service of the Union, Congress is to govern such part of them as may be employed in the actual service of the United States. And such part can only be subject to martial law. So that's the clarification. They can only call the militia out in whatever states, and it's only in those states that they can call martial law where the militia has been deployed. And so anybody that thinks that they can just put us under martial law and keep us under martial law, it's unconstitutional. And as a matter of fact, these were how it was sold. So this is the legally binding definition on martial law. So with that, I'm at a hard break, and we will be right back after this. So please stay tuned. We got more of this Madison's Rebut. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station.
That number to dial in is 215-TOP-TALK, 215-867-8255. And again, don't forget those three C's. And if you're ready to call in, the lines are open.
And so during the break, I was kind of looking over at how eloquently Madison was poking Mason in the eye. And, you know, the honorable member is under another mistake. You got to remember, he started this whole dialogue out with, let me get up to the top of this. He basically says, "Mr. Chairman, I most cordially agree with the honorable member last up." So the formalities and the if you want to call it political correctness or the genteel nature of politics back then, it's amusing. But this is really important, folks, because Madison just spelled out how militia and the martial law were entwined. They were together. They were inseparable. That you have to understand that there was no standing army, that the militia was the national defense. that they could have an army for going and fighting wars abroad or what have you, if they needed to defend an interest and or just like Jefferson did in defending the commerce. They used the Marine Corps and the Navy to project force in Tripoli and kick those Islamist butts that were harassing and holding us hostage and so forth. And that's the whole point of the national forces for actually fighting war abroad. The Army and the Navy was for war abroad, and the Marine Corps. The Air Force didn't exist at that point. I think during the Civil War, they started using hot air balloons, but that was still, you know, a lot of technology had yet to come. Anyway, back to this whole concept. The concept was that we were to use a militia. And still to this day, because the Constitution has not been changed, the constitutional requirement is to use a militia. Just because they didn't use and they violated the Constitution, and in violating the Constitution, everything they did on top of that, so the creation of corporations was all based upon unconstitutional standing. They had no constitutional standing for calling martial law or calling these advantages. And supposedly, people are asserting today that we're still under martial law. Based on the Constitution, I'm asking you, can you show me or tell me where we have the militia deployed? Because based on the way the Constitution was sold, martial law is not... It can't be called without the militia being called, and it can only be called in those areas where the militia is called for whatever uprising, for whatever insurrections or invasions, can they call martial law. And so, my friends, I'm telling you that we have a real problem because all sorts of things have been done under the disguise of what they thought they could do constitutionally when they were directly violating the Constitution. We have a house of cards. So let me go on to what Madison says. He says, the gentlemen in opposition have drawn a most tremendous picture of the Constitution in this respect, without considering that the power was absolutely indispensable. They have alarmed us with the possible abuse of it, but have shown no inducement or motive to tempt them from such abuse. Would the legislator of the state drag the militia from the eastern shore to the western frontiers, or those of the western frontiers to the eastern shore? If the local militia were sufficient to effect the intended purposes, there is something so preposterous and so full of mischief in the idea of dragging the militia unnecessarily from one end of the continent to the others, that I think there can be no ground of apprehension. If you limit their power over the militia, you give them a pretext for substituting a standing army. So there was no limit. I dare you to go check the Bill of Rights. There was no limit placed. So no standing army was allowed. Only the militia is allowed in the Constitution for national, or I should say, internal and domestic defense within the Republic. The military forces, the Army, the Navy, the Marine Corps, those are for external conflicts. And I go back on and say, if you put in the power of the state governments to refuse the militia by requiring their consent, you destroy the general government and sacrifice particular states. The same principle and motives which produce disobedience to requisitions will produce refusal in this case. And he goes on and says, the restrictions which the honorable gentleman mentioned to be in the British Constitution are all provisions against the power of the executive magistrate. But the House of Commons may, if they so be disposed, sacrifice the interest of their constituents in all those cases.
they may prolong the duration of mutiny bills and grant supplies to the king to carry on an impolitical war. But if they have no motives to do so, for they have strong motives to do their duty, we have more than ample security than the people of Great Britain. The powers of the government are more limited and guarded, and our representatives are more responsible to the members of the British House of Commons. Are more responsible than, not to, than the members of that the British House of Commons. And so Madison kind of closes it out with that. And then all of a sudden, Mr. Clay immediately follows and he says, by this power, our militia might be sent to Mississippi. He observed that the sheriff might raise the posse comitatus to execute the laws. He feared it would lead to the establishment of a military government as the militia were to be called forth as put the laws into execution. He asked why this mode was preferred to the old established custom of executing the laws. And guess who got back up to answer Mr. Clay? It was Mr. Madison. And Mr. Madison responds in kind and says that the power existed in all countries that the militia might be called forth for that purpose under the laws of this state and every other state in the Union, that public force must be used when resistance to the laws required it. Otherwise, society itself must be destroyed, that the mode referred to by the gentleman might not sufficiently on every occasion, as the sheriff must be necessarily restricted to the posse of his own country, if the posse of one country were insufficient to overcome the resistance to the execution of laws, this power must be resorted to. The old mode was not superseded by the introduction of the new one. And it is obvious that when the civil power is sufficient, this mode would never be put into practice. So he was basically saying that the sheriff can actually use the posse comitatus in forcing execution. However, if it is insufficient, then the next step is the militia. Not the EPA, not the ATF, not some other federal unconstitutional bureaucracies that have no business being out in the states in the first place. Mr. Nicholas then gets up and decides to respond in adding to what Mr. Madison says. And he says, Mr. Chairman, the great object of government in every country is security and public defense. I suppose, therefore, that what we ought to attend to here is what is the best mode of enabling the general government to protect us. One of three ways must be pursued for this purpose. We must either empower them to employ and rely altogether on a standing army, or depend altogether on a militia, or else we must enable them to use the one or the other of these two ways as may be found most expedient. The last reflection will satisfy us that the convention has adopted the only proper method. If a standing army were alone to be employed, such as an army must be to be kept in time of peace as would be sufficient in war. The dangers of such an army are so striking that every man would oppose the adoption of this government. So he's really spelling out that you can't have the one and or the other. They really relied upon the militia here. And he says, the dangers are so striking, I repeat, of such an army are so striking that every man would oppose the adoption of this government. Had it been proposed by the only mode of defense, would it be safe to depend on militia alone without the agency or regular forces even in time of war? Were we to invade by a powerful, disciplined army, should we be safe with militia? Could men be unacquainted with the hardships and unskilled in the discipline of war? Men are only inured in the peaceable occupations of domestic life, encounter with the success of the most skilled veterans, inured to the fatigues and toils of campaigns. Although some Although some people are pleased with the theory of reliance on militia as the sole defense of a nation, yet I think it would be found in practice to be by no means adequate. Its adequacy is proved in the experience of other nations, but it were fully adequate, it would be unequal. If war, and he goes on and we'll get into this, but he's trying to paint the picture that if we can't get the militia, then that's when they call up and create the standing army. But he definitely said before that we did not want to have a standing army. And I'll tell you why when we get back right after this. Thank you so much. Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
Okay, if you want to join in on the dialogue, you need to call 215-TOP-TALK. That's 215-867-8255.
And so one of the things that Nicholas points out, and here's the interesting thing, in the history of this republic, we have never been invaded. We have never been truly attacked, other than Hawaii, which was kind of more of a result of FDR's behavior in the Pacific. Not that we shouldn't have been in the war, but anyway, Nicholas points out that if we are to be invaded by an army, whether it be the Russians or whomever, that the militia alone, I mean, it's one thing to deal with an invasion like what we're dealing with on the southern border, but when we're actually being invaded by a world-class army, then what we need to do is at that point deploy the militia, because that would be our initial defense. But we would have to take the war, obviously, to where it is being, where we've been infiltrated, and then kick butt and project the army back outward. There is a need, and the mechanism has to be that the militia is called first, that we don't have a standing army, that in the necessity of a real war and invasion, then a standing army can be called. But we never had that. I want to be very clear. When we had the Civil War, the South did not invade the North. It was converse. The North invaded and went after the South. And then in those skirmishes, did it start smearing across the lines in just trying to keep the northern aggressions out of the South? The truth be told, and I've gone down this path before, and I'll just quickly summarize that the Monroe Doctrine was sufficient. that what Lincoln should have done, instead of actually forcing the states to be a part of the Union and say, you can't leave because he was unconstitutionally incorrect, they could. However, what he should have done was said, okay, well, we're going to apply the Monroe Doctrine on slavery, and we're not going to allow slavery to exist. Had he gone down that path, the North probably would have won every war. But instead, he went after these people, you know, that they didn't want to be a part of it. And the people that were fighting the war for the North didn't care whether they were forcing. These guys didn't want to be a part of it. That's why the North lost so many battles, is because the North wasn't really that enamored with forcing these guys to be a part of the Union that didn't want to be a part of the Union. But as soon as he made it about slavery and freeing all people, that's when the North got behind the war and the concept of not allowing the South to maintain slavery. And that in itself was the motivational factor that changed. And like I said, had he used the Monroe Doctrine and went down that path, there's no doubt in my mind that they wouldn't have lost so many lives, and the things would have turned out a lot better and a lot different. No doubt in my mind. So anyway, Madison pipes up in following Nicholas's opining. He says, Mr. Chairman, the honorable gentleman has laid much stress on the maxim that the purse and the sword ought to be put in the same hands, with a view of pointing out the impropriety of vesting this power in the general government. But it is totally inapplicable to this question. What is the meaning of this maxim? Does it mean that the sword and purse ought not to be trusted in the hands of the same government? This cannot be the meaning, for there never was, and I can say there never will be, an efficient government in which both are not vested. The only rational meaning is that the sword and purse are not to be given to the same member. Apply it to the British government, which has been mentioned, the sword in the hands of the British king, the purse in the hands of Parliament. It is also in America, as far as many analogy can exist. Would the honorable member say that the sword ought to be paid, or ought to be put in the hands of the representatives of the people, or in the other hands, independent of the government altogether? He says so, it will violate the meaning of that maxim. This would be the novelty hitherto unprecedented. The purse is in the hands of the representatives of the people. They have the apportionment of all monies. They have the direction and regulation of land and naval forces. They are to provide for calling forth the militia. And the president is to have the command, and in conjunction with the Senate, to appoint the officers. This means ought to be commensurate to the end. The end is general protection. This cannot be effected without a general power to use the strength of the Union. We are told that by both sides are distinguished. We are told that both sides are distinguished by these great traits, confidence and distrust. Perhaps there may be a less of greater tincture of suspicion on one side than the other. But give me leave to say that where power can be safely lodged, it can be necessarily reason commands its secession. In such case, it is imprudent and unsafe to withhold it. It is universally admitted that it must be lodged in some other hands or other. The question then is, in what part of the government is it ought to be placed, and not whether any other political body, independent of the government, should have it or not. I profess myself to have had a uniform zeal for a Republican government. If the honorable member or any other person conceives that my attachment to the system arises from a different source, he is greatly mistaken. From the first moment that my mind was capable of contemplating political subjects,
I never, till this moment, ceased wishing success to a well-regulated Republican government. The establishment of such in America was my most ardent desire. I have considered alternatively, and my considerations has been aided by my experience, the tendency of relaxation of laws and licentiousness of manners. If we review the history of all republics, we are justified in the supposition that if in the bands of the government be relaxed, confusion will ensue. Anarchy ever has produced, and I fear ever will produce, despotism. What was the state of things that preceded the wars and revolutions in Germany? Factions and confusion. And see, there was the same problem with World War I and World War II, right? Factions and confusion. What produced the disorders and commotions of Holland? The like causes in this Commonwealth and every state in the Union and relaxed operation of the government has been sufficient to alarm the friends of their country. I'm telling you, my friends, I'm taking an aside right here. The laxed position of Congress regarding our immigration laws is unacceptable, and it is causing us to get into anarchy and despotism. That's exactly what they're trying to do. What produced the disorders? Okay, move on. The rapid increase of population in every state is an additional reason to check dissipation and licentiousness. Does it not strongly call for the friends of Republican government to endeavor to establish a Republican organization? A change is absolutely necessary. I can see no danger in submitting to practice an experiment which seems to be founded on the best theoretic principles. But the honorable member tells us there is not an equal responsibility delineated on that paper to that which is in the English government. Calculations have been made here that when you strike off those entirely elected by the influence of the crown, the other part does not bear a greater proportion of the number of their people. Then the number fixed in that paper bears to the number of inhabitants in the United States. If it were otherwise, there still is more responsibility in this government. Our representatives are chosen for 2 years. In Great Britain, they're chosen for 7 years. And citizens may be elected here. In Great Britain, no one can be elected to represent a county without having an estate of the value of £600 of sterling a year. You understand what he just said? Anybody, any poor sod can become a public servant. In Britain, you had to have a certain amount of wealth, nor to represent a corporation without an annual estate of £300,000. Yet we are told that there is no sympathy or fellow feeling between the people here and their representatives, but that in England they have both. A just comparison will show that if confidence be due to the government there, it is due tenfold here. And so where are we? We got less than a minute. I got 30 seconds. Madison, I think, makes the most salient points here, that we literally have to have a good grip on maintaining our laws, that we cannot become licentious or lazy and lackadaisical about enforcing. That is how they have induced corruption into our system. And by creating these unconstitutional handouts, they've created like this golden pot at the end of the rainbow for illegals when they come here. Oh, then all we got to do is put you on this and you'll be okay and you'll have a better life here. And that is so true. They have a better life here, but they're doing it at the violation of the Constitution, and we're obligated to fix this. We need to audit the Constitution and call these folks out for every violation. I'm G.R. Mobley. I'm Reclaiming the Republic, and I need your help. God bless. I'll be back tomorrow. The reason progressives are effective in instituting their policies is because they are united ideologically, financially, and socially. In addition, almost every billionaire in the world is funding a vast array of different groups, and these groups' efforts are to undermine our republic and our Constitution. If you don't believe me, just Google donors to the Open Society Foundations. The only way we're going to successfully combat these efforts and take back our liberties, like our education system, healthcare, state lands, housing, labor, and many other roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states, is by you and I and local businesses getting involved in supporting political programs and efforts based on constitutional principles. The best way to do this is supporting result-oriented organizations designed to take back our lost liberties. The ultimate result-oriented effort is Republic Review. So please consider contributing to the show and the organizations and activities that we are supporting by going to reclaimingtherepublic.org and go to the contributions page, and you can become a listed supporter of Liberty.